Warning. The opinions expressed on this radio show are not approved by any of the usual sponsoring authorities. Please help this show remain non-commercial and subversive. Go to truthjihad.com and subscribe or offer a one-time donation. Thank you, and God bless. Welcome back. This is the second hour of Truth Jihad Radio here on Revolution Radio, the greatest all-time listener-sponsored network. You can go to revolution.radio. It's not freedomslips.com, although I think that still works. But the new website is revolution.radio. And hey, that's actually easier to remember. It's a pretty cool-looking website. And I think we've even got our channels of communication set up here. So we're going to have a glitch-free second hour, inshallah. Okay, who are we going to bring up here? Well, none other than Brendan O'Connell. Brendan is a former political prisoner who spent 3 years locked up in horrific conditions in Australia for the crime of telling off a Zionist who actually accosted him at a Palestine demonstration. It's an unbelievable but true story. And he's been on the run ever since then. He didn't want to give up his free speech rights. So he got in more trouble with the Aussie authorities when they tried to keep him off the internet and force him to keep muzzled. And he didn't want to be muzzled. And so he violated some terms of probation or whatever, got in some more legal trouble, and he had to leave Australia. And he's been a prisoner of, a seeker of asylum ever since. He was a prisoner of conscience when he was in Australia. And now he's been looking for asylum, and he went to New Zealand. And, well, that's where we're going to pick up the story here, because it didn't work out so well. Let's see if we can bring Brendan up here. And it's going to be great to talk to him, because it's been since October. He's been locked up, or he's locked up in New Zealand since October. And a lot of us were kind of frantic with concern about him. So, hey, Brendan, is that you?
It is me. I'm really sorry, Kevin. My laptop, which the New Zealand Customs and Border Control had in their access, has clearly been hacked, and I've had to shift to. I've got my phone working, so I've got some interesting screenshots I'm going to send to an IT friend. Anyway, we're talking. Hopefully, it'll work.
Well, it seems to be working okay. At least it was. Hello, Brendan. You still there?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear. I'm on my phone. This is my phone. I've got Skype on the phone, but the laptop wouldn't work. It's being hacked, and there was all sorts of strange things. It's actually being hacked on a network, so it's really obvious. But so it's working now. I'm on my phone, and just thank you and to everyone who assisted. It was a very challenging time.
Let's talk about it, because you know, last time I spoke to you, you know, you were in Malaysia, where you are now, and, you know, looking maybe for some kind of better settled situation, and you tried Iran in the past, and that didn't quite work out. So then suddenly, next thing you know, I get word that you've gone to New Zealand, and they've arrested you and incarcerated you, and you're seeking asylum there. And then it just kind of stretches on and on and on. All kinds of craziness. Trying to communicate with you, it was like everybody was being stonewalled. You know, can they do that? Like, you're an asylum seeker, they can just disappear you. This whole thing has been completely crazy and disturbing. Why don't you pick it up and give us a recap of what led you to go to New Zealand, and then what happened?
You said crazy. Did you expect anything else? It's been one long crazy 9 years. Let me explain. I sent you some extensive notes. Let me try and get my head around it. I'm not entirely well. I got back on Wednesday morning at 7:30 in the morning. All right, let me start. There's a guy called Chris Paul. He's in New Zealand. I've talked to him for quite a while. He's a former New Zealand economist. If you don't remember that, but Netanyahu had said that New Zealand had declared war on Israel. New Zealand's got a very long history of fighting apartheid South Africa, and little old New Zealand, 4 million people, have got a long history of giving it to Israel and speaking out boldly. Chris had nagged me and said, "You're an idiot. Look, it's probably easier given the political situation. Prime Minister Najib Razak had been threatened by Trump for indictment. Malaysia has had a huge history of fighting Israel. As you know, they held conferences. They've lost 2 aircraft very suspiciously. Dr. Mahathir Mohamad has made statements about Jewish power and the political Zionist movement. Malaysia's been hugely fighting Israel. And Israel recently threatened Malaysia, some of their journals stating that there was only one country in Asia who continued to resist Israel, and that was Malaysia. So that was a real threat. And I thought, I just don't know if my long-term prospects in Malaysia were good. So Chris made sense. Chris was a former New Zealand economist. The second in charge of the Crown Solicitor's Office was Virginia Hardy. I had a private number, friend of his. He's friends with Supreme Court justices, human rights commissioners. Lord, the very famous band, Lord, is his is a close relative. Chris is about 70, but she's a relative. In fact, Lord, which is a huge worldwide band, a New Zealand-based band, just said to Israel to go to hell. They wouldn't play in Israel. So expect another earthquake in New Zealand any day, most likely. So there was a lot of sense in going there, or at least at the time. That's what I thought. Now, I rang an immigration and criminal lawyers, Marshall Burden Curtis. I spoke to Carol Curtis. She said, "Look," I said, "look, it's a very strange case. It was high profile. I have to speak with you and have a realistic appraisal of whether this will work." I had to leave Malaysia anyway due to the 3-month tourist visa. I needed to do a visa run. And Chris assured me I could stay with him in Wellington, which is the capital of New Zealand. He has extensive establishment contacts. His multi-generational family involved in politics. There's no one he doesn't know there. He's a Scorpio character like myself most soon, and you know how tenacious we are. And so he's hardcore tenacious, but I don't think we thought it through adequately. And I meticulously prepared documentation, audiovisual material. Carol Curtis said, "Look, just come through with the agreement." I could have just scanned my passport and walked straight in. But it said, "If you have served more than 1 year in jail, you must declare this now." Now, I thought, I had an appointment that morning. I got there on Friday, October the 13th, Friday the 13th at 12:30 a.m. And I thought, I'm going to do things by the book. I better declare it. And Carol said, "If there's any problems, just declare asylum at the border." They were really nice for half a day. The guy said, "Dude, I got no problem with it. It's not a problem." I gave him meticulous documentation, multiple interviews. That was all through Friday. Finally, on Saturday, it changed, and someone had made a call, and they said, "We're not going to grant you permission to another country." And I said, "Fine, I want to apply for asylum, political asylum." And they said, "Oh, all right, but we want to give you a chance to do a turnaround, meaning you can jump on a plane and leave, go wherever you want." And I said, "Well, no, I'm going to claim asylum." And they said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yeah, I'm sure. That's what I'm here for." And here's my lawyer, Carol Curtis. And they said, "Mr. O'Connell, are you going to go into the penal system?" I said, "No, I'm not. It's an immigration detention center. If I'm not free, then..." And they said, "No, we don't have that here. You go into a maximum security jail," or as they call it, a high security jail. But it's maximum security, US standard and Australian standard. It's a remand center called Mount Eden. Very nice name. It's backwards. I couldn't believe what I found.
So it sounds like paradise.
Oh, this is progressive liberal New Zealand, the land of gay rights, gay marriage, transgender rights. Well, that's about the only... They're a one-trick pony, because that's about the only rights anyone's got. It was quite bizarre. It's a very strange place. Don't get me wrong, I met some wonderful people, but it was strange. And I have to make an apology to the West Australian prison system, which basically qualifies as Sweden as compared to New Zealand.
Wow.
Oh, God, what a contrast. New Zealand, you just think it's, you know, it's the land of hobbits and fair go and really nice people. And they are nice people, but they don't have a damn clue.
The landscape is great, but I imagine from a maximum security lockup. You're not seeing the same New Zealand.
Oh, Kevin, I had the ultimate tour. How many people can say they've seen the Auckland Airport, the Manukau District Court, and the Mount Eden maximum security?
That's true. Yeah, I was in New Zealand back in the 1970s, and I went to Wellington. I went to South Island. Drove all over South Island with my dad. It was great. But it sounds like you didn't get that tour.
No, I had the guided tour. I had the specialist tour. Only special people get. But this was well planned. This was not pie in the sky. I had to think, well, what are my long-term options? I want to get my nursing degree again. There's a chance I can do this, and I'll just have to accept the fact that I have to back off and get a life. I'm 47 years old. I want to get married. I want to have kids. I can't keep this up. I'm dying here. I'm not handling things well. I'm under a lot of stress. I'm in a windowless hotel room. Malaysia's been very friendly and nice to me, but, you know, work-wise, you know, I have to take a cold, hard look at things. So I decided to go to New Zealand based on the fact that I thought, worst case, I'll be in an immigration detention centre with full access to computers, the internet, emails, phone, unlimited phone calls, whoever I want, and the ability to prepare for the High Court case. Well, when they said, you're going to be detained, well, I said, well, hell with that. I'm getting on the plane, then I'm leaving. They said, nah. And this is what they said, too late now, Brendan, too late now. And I said, excuse me, I was going to punch him in the head. I've forgotten his name. It was an Anglo-Indian guy, and James. I haven't forgotten you, James. I couldn't believe what he said. Anyway, Chris rang and said, no, lawyers are on the way. It's just like, God, what time was it? This is in the morning, or early hours of a Saturday morning. And he said, no, do your refugee claim. To hell with it. Keep it going. And I thought, oh, God. So in the end, I told them, well, I don't want to do a refugee claim. To hell with that. I just want to get out of here. And they said, we're going to deport you to Australia. I said, like F you are. And in the end, no lawyer showed up because it was a silly thing Chris said. Chris was panicking. He was there to assist me. He didn't handle things exactly well, but we were both in a bit of shock as to the way I was being treated, considering the extensive documentation. And we thought I'd be in some sort of immigration detention center. Lo and behold, New Zealand doesn't have an immigration detention center. It shoves you. It's the only country in the damn world that shoves you in a high security jail. No other country does it.
That would have been nice to know ahead of time.
Yeah, I would never have gone. But who's New Zealand? Of course they've got their approach. They signed up to all the UNHCR conventions on the treatment of refugees and the Nelson Mandela rules and the treatment. Because remember, they're punishing you for seeking asylum. That's what they do. They stick you with axe murderers.
Yeah, that's really strange. I would have thought New Zealand, which is like Australia, it has a history of immigration, and I thought they liked immigrants. They liked people coming there. This is hard to imagine, and they're so liberal and friendly and all that. It's just hard to imagine.
No, Kevin. Let me give you the rundown. The fallout from this is huge. It is huge. I'm glad I went. It cost me $3,500. I was stressful, but let me tell you, the fallout is continuing, and that's going to continue for a long time. Let me tell you what happened. You're going to love this. Hopefully, it's going to take an hour. But so I expected the same as you. I thought, because New Zealand's always bleating on about human rights, so of course they've got they're wonderful. It's going to be like Sweden, man. Even worst case, I'm detained, but I can do everything I need to do. In Australia, I mean, on Manus Island, which was in the news, 400 asylum seekers were screaming about the horrible conditions. They go fishing, swimming, they have mobile phones, full access to computers, the internet, cooking facilities, and they can wander around, do whatever they like. Even in Perth in Western Australia, where some of the biggest immigration detention centres are because of the massive boat people coming from Indonesia to Christmas Island, I know people that work there, and they don't have their mobile phones, but they have full access to phones, call whoever they want, internet access, word processing, phones, faxes, printers, whatever they need, their clothes, their personal effects, their luggage, just
well,
no alcohol.
Well, if you're applying for asylum, you obviously need to be able to communicate and build a case.
Well, of course, and that's the whole point. Remember, you're an asylum seeker. You're not a prisoner. You're not to be published for seeking refugee status while your claim is assessed, and either they will put you into the community with some sort of orders or control orders or limitations, or they'll give you a visa, or alternatively, you will be detained at the minimum amount. The rules are very specific. I became an expert in the rules. They're very specific. The minimum account. I mean, you can walk into Switzerland or Germany with no documentation, say, my name's Bill Smith, take a thumbprint, they give you an ID, and you walk off. But not in Australia.
That supposedly happened quite a bit with Syrian people and sub-Saharan Africans and so on.
I know for a fact, because I met some of the hardcore people who've been running around the world trying to get asylum. So I became a full bottle. They gave me the stories you wouldn't believe. And they were in shock there in New Zealand. They didn't know what to do. So anyway, these guys are all vulnerable. They're too scared to speak up. And of course, I've turned up in the middle of a huge shit, a huge fight between New Zealand and Australia. The political relations are at their lowest ever. The Foreign Minister, Julie Bishop, the equivalent of like Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State, that's called the Minister of Foreign Affairs, the DFAT, Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. She, Jacinta Ardern, is the new Prime Minister of New Zealand. It's a socialist, left-wing Democrat type party, Labor Party. Some nice people in there. They want to try and fix things. She managed to get power with a agreement with Winston Peters, a well-known Maori Indigenous activist who's an ultra-nationalist, really, and does done a lot of good. He formed a party with her. It was touch and go. And the Foreign Minister of Australia said, we cannot work with that government, with that woman. It was unheard of statements she was making. So I landed in the middle of this. It was perfect timing. And I think, but lo and behold, with the conditions I found, I went in and said, I had no cup. I had no, hardly any clothes. I had no underpants except the ones I had. I had no shoes for 9 days, no thongs. The staff were miserable. The director needs to be sacked. I met him. He's a smart ass. The staffs, prisoners, officers were asking me to make complaints. Nothing will change until you make complaints. Everyone was leaving. They were bringing prison officers in from all over the world. They were lasting a month and leaving. The gangs run the jail. The gangs just swear and tell the prison officers to go to hell. I lasted 2 days in mainstream. I said, get me the hell out of here. They beat up anyone who's not a gang member or family. I met a couple of nice people there. I got into segregation. And it's a little bit better there, a bit more low-key. I said, I need access to materials while I'm in this prison. They said, there are no access to anything. I said, I need my luggage so I can get my legal paperwork. No, you can't have access to your luggage. I said, I need access to my phones to get phone numbers to call people. No, you can't have access to your phones. I said, you are ridiculous. I'm an Australian citizen and I need to call people, tell people where I am. I was just sitting there going, what the hell is going on here? So not only do you shove me in a prison, you're worse than that. You're 10 times worse than Western Australia. This went on for considerable.
You've convinced me. If I ever have to apply for asylum, New Zealand won't be at the top of the list of countries.
Next year, trust me, there's going to be changes, and I'm really proud. Me and an African guy, Robert, we tore New Zealand a new body cavity. Excuse my French. We absolutely slaughtered him. He's a millionaire. He had a top lawyer. But let me continue on. So all this is going on, and I'm realizing that finally I said, I need to speak to my lawyer in Australia, Kevin Foley. I finally get him on the office phone. I get a phone call to a lawyer. And Kevin says, look, all hell broken loose. Don't try and come back. Ask for political asylum. The conditions are good. And I'd spoken previously, and people said, you've got a claim for asylum. Like, yeah, it's touch and go, but you've got a claim. And he said, but I said, but Kevin, I can't do anything. I can't do anything for the High Court. I can't access anything. He says, look, we'll sort of that. Carol's on board. We've given her $7,200, which actually they didn't have to do. It could have been done via legal aid. But anyway, it was done. And sign up. And I went, all right, you know, people are on board now. I've relaxed a little bit. And I told him it was bad. I need to get out of here and out into the community with Chris under conditions. Fine, I'll sign conditions and make no public statements, which I've done before. And the next day, without even requesting formally asylum again, who turns up? Immigration New Zealand. And they are hankering for me to sign on the dotted line. So they wanted my application big time. Two women, I gave a lengthy statement, said, oh, good, things are happening. I won't be here long. I'll be released into the community. Lo and behold, it just gets worse. The conditions are worse. The prison conditions are outrageous. The food is, and I'm not a fussy eater, Kevin, that food was disgusting. It was utterly disgusting. And I said to the people, I said, the food was, the canteen, most of the people have no money. There's not a cup. I said, even a Soviet gulag has a cup. They fill up old milk cartons. I said, just from an occ health and safety perspective, half the cells have hanging points. They said, yeah, a lot of, you tell the guards, you say, you do realize occ health and safety, this would be shut down in Australia and America. The hanging points are everywhere. And he goes, yeah, a lot of people hang themselves in this chart. And I just went, these people are hicks. This is Possum Trot, Kentucky. This is Arkansas, mean Arkansas. What the hell is going on? They don't even know the basic rules. They were not, don't get me wrong, I don't want to insult them. They were really nice people. I had a prison officer that the Maoris are really like. The Islanders are really cool. You know, this Maori police officer, when I was in the holding cells prior to the prison, I mean, we went through my stuff and I signed off on all the materials in there. And he goes, oh, brother, your Bible, don't forget your Bible, bro. And I went, oh, thanks for that. And he puts me in the holding cells and goes, hey, brother, look, just try and relax. God bless you. You try and have a good sleep. Now, never in Australia would you have a police officer say that to you, but there's a lot of really beautiful people in New Zealand, police officers and prison officers. I want to say that.
Shout out to them. But still, I'm trying to imagine how you must be feeling here without the opportunity to really to make your case. That being cut off from communications and from your legal papers, I mean, makes it impossible.
It's better. Yeah, exactly. And you think, how did I get here? But I knew better. I said, Brendan, you know there's going to be a silver lining. Just trust in God, pray, weep, you're powerless, accept it. Just float down these rapids, metaphorically. I actually had a dream where I was trying to paddle this big tractor tire on these rapids, and it was just impossible. And I realized I'd just throw away the paddle, lie back, and just kick off the rocks and just make it to the bottom. And that was a dream, and it was perfect, you know.
That's so nice. That sounds a little – that's Islam. That's a surrender to the divine. Go with the flow.
Islam's submission. God had me here. Don't get me wrong. I didn't like it. But I knew in the back of my mind, same as Perth, Western Australia. And I said to one of the immigration, why don't you ring Western Australia and ask them what happened? They laughed at me. But I tell you, after 3 years, no one was laughing. I urge you to stop stepping on your privates and digging this hole. You're only hurting yourself. And they just looked at me, yeah, whatever. I went, okay, carry on. So I'm noting in my letters, food gets a little better, as I note in my letters, which I doubt were ever sent. Only the tracked letters got to me, Federal Express, full tracking, all the other ones.
I got one copy of one of your letters that was the one to be released in the event of an emergency, which it wasn't really clear whether I was supposed to wait till you were able to somehow communicate that there was an emergency, or whether...
Because Richard probably shouldn't have released at that time, but he didn't know. We couldn't talk. I rang him once, and I only rang him once because I had the secret PIN number. We got the secret PIN number of one of the prison officers, which means you can ring anyone. And that's the only reason I got to speak to Richard and tell him. And my memory's a little hazy, but Richard was doing the best he can. Now, Richard Foley is the son of Kevin Foley, my solicitor. Now, Richard does not work for his father at all, all right? It's just I realized that I couldn't sort this out legally. And I went to Richard. Now, Kevin did the best he could under the circumstances. I only spoke to Kevin once on my phone card and twice in the office. Imagine that. 10 weeks, I had 30 minutes of calls to my legal representation.
Man.
That is ridiculous.
Crazy.
Ridiculous. When I said, okay, I'm going to war. I said, I'm going to war. This is not good. I met multimillionaire immigration detainees. I got to learn the ins and outs of New Zealand immigration. There are a bunch of you know what. Not all of them, but I understand New Zealand's predicament. There's only 4 million people. They have a lot of their own problems. They can't afford 1,000 Indian students with the same story. Look, it's a rot. Most of the immigration asylum seekers are still rot. If you want to get into New Zealand, you have to be an Afghani. If you want to get in quick, because it's really hard for them to get there. So if they give them asylum, they know they're not going to get inundated, because what happens is, like, a lot of Indian students try it. That's why they shove them in jail, to put them off. Because if one, you know, probably deserves it, gets in trouble, the police are quite corrupt, he gets death threats, and there are clear cases where they are deserving. But they know if Gupta gets asylum, he's going to tell his friends. And in 6 months, they're going to have 1,000 Indian students land at the airport, tear up their fake passports, and claim asylum with the same story. This is how the rot works. So New Zealand is trying to protect itself. It's unfortunate, but the bottom line is they signed the UNHCR. So your problem. You're just going to have to deal with it. If you don't like it, unsign from the UNHCR. You signed a contract. You're obligated to stick to it. So that's their problem. But that's why they do what they do, in part. But they're also preying on the vulnerable, because the real good ones are scared. They don't want to upset New Zealand immigration. And finally, I'd had enough. And on November the 15th, I hit the court and I spoke with Robin and said, right, we're going to war. And he said, yep, I'm with you.
I'm sorry, wait, which month was this? The 15th of?
November the 15th.
Okay.
So in we went to the Manukau District Court, where civil administrative warrants, we're not in the criminal system, we're civil, okay? You're a civil administrative warrant of commitment. And every month you must go back to the court, jump in a van, be strip searched, have your body cavities examined and all that, you know, which I'm so used to now, lift your testicles, yes, like, yawn. You know, I got so used to it in WA, no
wow.
problem.
See, I still can't get used to just going through the searches at the airports. I have hip replacement, so I always get patted down. Right. I'll never get used to that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, look, Kevin, you get used to anything. Trust me.
Maybe
but,
so.
You know, it's very humiliating. But now it's like, I don't know. I take it as a badge of honor. Don't get me wrong. I don't like it. But I just think, you know what? The worse you treat me, yeah, I mean, the worst thing they could do is take me in and treat me nice. What am I going to say? Oh, they were really nice to me. But I said, keep it up. So November the 15th, Andrew Chanik Park and his offsider. He walks in and he's the one guy that always gives me the warrant before I hit the court in the meeting room. And I said, Andrew, right. I said, this is effing it. I said, you are lying. You are lying to Carol. You have stopped. You have not given her all the paperwork and stuff. She doesn't know me in my case except the garbage she reads online. She's clearly not quite on board. She's doing the best. And I said, I'm not happy, man. I'm going to go to war with her. I said, you know I have a case. You can't do this. You're breaking every UNHCR regulation. And you know I'm going to embarrass you. And he said, I know. Make a complaint. And I went, wow, these guys are on my side. Well, not on my side, but they're saying, yeah, there's a problem. And it's not us. It's someone in New Zealand Immigration and New Zealand Intelligence who are very close because they have to assess people. And they're probably talking to their comrades over in Australia. And they were trying to deport me back to Australia under extradite me under that silly open warrant of making a private telephone call public. So these were the shenanigans going on. So, right, I got out. I hit the court in my proudest moment. I said, I don't want a lawyer. I'm going to present myself. The judge sat there and I said, I'm going to set her up. I'm pretty good at that. I said, Your Honor, do you make rulings on immigration issues? And she said, I'm not answering that. And I thought, my God, I can't even believe she said that. I'm not answering that. I should have said, well, in that case, why don't you get lost and we'll get someone who does. But I wasn't thinking quick enough. So I said, okay.
Dismissed.
Yeah. I said, well, probably could have said, okay, dismissed, but I'll just walk out now. I'm heading to the Auckland Cafe for lunch. So I'm telling you, you can't make this stuff up. Next one, I said, well, Your Honor, is New Zealand a signatory? Are you aware that New Zealand is a signatory to all United Nations, UNHCR conventions on the treatment of asylum seekers and the treatment of prisoners, the rights of the prisoners under the Nelson Mandela rules? Are you aware of that? I can't remember exact words. It was on the lines of, well, what's your point? I said, well, I'm going to read from a statement. And I read off the legislation. I read off all the points, and I absolutely ripped into them. And then I turned to the lawyers, and this was my golden whip of courts cleansing the temple moment. And I pointed at them and I said, and you, shame on you. And they were all looking at their desks. No one would look up from their desk. I said, you have failed to vigorously advocate for your clients. You should be ashamed of yourselves. You've left them in high risk, high security environment, contrary to every UN regulation. You are the ones that have allowed this to happen. After that, the judge was completely rattled. She was completely rattled. She just read off the warrant of commitment. I walked back out. I saw Robert. He had a little grin on his face. And there was, because they're all lined up just outside the door. Everyone heard everything. Back into the prison we went. Lo and behold, Robert's lawyer is a highly aggressive, well-paid lawyer because Robert's loaded. He's an African businessman and his story is private, but he's got a story to tell. And Robert said, man, my lawyer saw me after and said, who was that guy? That was incredible. He said, at last, someone's raised the issue. This has got to be fixed. And, you know, a shame it had to be a client do it. The lawyer should have been doing it. But he said, get the written complaint, sign as many of you can. There's 13 of you. We've got 5 to sign that we could get hold of. And I wrote a 6-page letter with Robert. And it was, he scanned it. He got it scanned. We had a good prison officer, scanned it immediately, and it was sent to his lawyer. And the lawyer hand-delivered it the next day to the immigration minister. And there was a big report being done. We don't know the results of that report, but it shattered them. They're humiliated. The new government will probably fix it when they should name the immigration detention center the O'Connell Mr.
Robert. So when they change all the rules, are you going to go back and actually get asylum?
No, I've fallen in love with Malaysia. I'll tell you what happened when I got back. I'm done with, there's going to be a lot of fallout, a huge amount of fallout from this case. It went viral. Chris was talking to anyone and everyone. There was obviously a lot of shenanigans online. People were calling me a fraud. That Ryan Dawson, I heard what he was saying. Shame on that piece of garbage.
I totally missed that. I didn't know.
I mean, the guys, you call him a mentally ill. I think Ryan Dawson, you know. Anyway, I'm not gonna get sucked into that. But the point was, I was trying to say that I was never given asylum when I had the screenshots from the lawyer saying, do you want the receipt? You need the receipt for your 90-day visa extension. And I said, no, I'm leaving. I've had enough, you know. And I've spoken in detail with you what happened. Now, I'm not here to cause problems with Iran, but I'm a bit of an Ahmadinejad fan. I'm not a big fan of the Rafsanjani, Rouhani, Zarif crowd, who I believe are up to mischief. That's just my opinion. Regardless, obviously I've upset people, but they're lying, and that lawyer, David T. Lashgari, is an absolute fraud piece of garbage.
Now Brendan, I was told, I think Mason said, that somebody in New Zealand, they were trying to gaslight you and tell you, no, you've never been to Iran.
Oh, it gets better. So we get the ladder off, and I'm fuming. I'm hopping up and down. I said, "Nah, Robert, I'm not taking this. I'm going to do a hunger strike." And I was thinking, you know, you get one life in this world and one hunger strike. Two hunger strikes is not a good idea. 47. I did that 79 days, 3 weeks on water, and then diluted Gatorade for a grand total of 79. And I was very silly to go that long, very stupid. And I think, nah, I have to do it, because I was just so peaked. I couldn't handle it any longer. I was in cells with people that had their TVs on full bore all the time. I can't relax. I had no pillow. I had, you know, I was lying on plastic with a blanket. I couldn't even get a damn sheet. And I thought, I just cannot handle this anymore. I'm going to do the only thing I can do, non-violence. The only thing I can do is a hunger strike. So I told them, I'm doing a hunger strike. And they went, oh, they were sort of like, cool, something new. And they shoved me up into a private cell, which is bad because it upsets the other prisoners, which is part of their plan. They left the door open. I said, no, close and lock the door. I'm not walking out. I know the protocols for this. I'm the expert. I could write the book. And then I said, no. I said, get me down to solitary in a single cell away from the unit where I need to be. Oh, no, we don't do that. You know, you don't get it. You know, that doesn't happen. We don't have solitary. I said, stop your lies. And I said, listen, you're stressing me out. Maybe I'll hurt myself or something. So get me down to that thing. And he goes, oh, God, don't do that. I said, listen, yeah, I may be suicidal. So you are going to take me down to the at-risk unit. You're going to do it. Well, anyway, so I played the game, got there. And, of course, here's what they do to hunger strikers. This is their standard routine. It was unbelievable. In Western Australia, they were cheering me on. They were taking bets to see how long I could last. Could I beat Bobby Sands? They let me ring whoever I want, do interviews. God bless West Australian prison system to some extent. I was treated pretty well considering, but there was obviously some very bad things that happened. In New Zealand, I couldn't believe it. They took me to the at-risk unit. They stripped me down. It's called the round room. It's a room with that shiny stuff to stop graffiti. There's nothing in there. It's completely bare. There's a mattress on the floor with a stiff blanket that you can't hang yourself with, and you're stripped naked, completely searched, and you put this stiff cardboard-like vest on. You're completely naked with a camera 24/7.
Wow. So if you weren't completely suicidal before that, you will be once they've done that to you.
This is Kevin. This is outrageous. It's going to have to be an inquiry. What's going on here? New Zealand, there's something wrong with them. Mentally ill. Anyway, so I'm their worst nightmare. I know the law. I know health and safety. And I'm a mental health trained and comprehensive acute care setting ICU emergency department where I've worked for 5 years before I left. So I know my stuff. Right? So I'm going, okay. I said, this is actually good because this is so bad. I'm going to have a story to tell. And here I am talking to you, the first person I've talked to. So it's completely bare. They wake you every 15 minutes, 24/7.
Oh, my God. This is like Guantanamo.
Let me get to it. You have to ask for water. You have a urinal. You have to pee into the bottle with a camera on you. And there's a pan if you need to evacuate your bowels. And no way to cover yourself up from the humiliation. And now, the staff are okay. Don't get me wrong. The staff are just stupid. They didn't really comprehend. So I'm going to give them a chance. They didn't know they were sinning, per se. Their eyes were not open. They are now. However, after a week of this, I was a complete wreck. Every morning.
A whole week of this? Yeah.
Well, this went on for 15 minutes. But a part of me was loving it because I thought, geez, I hope they beat me up next. Maybe they should break my arm. This is good. You know, I mean, I didn't like it, but I thought, that's so stupid. They don't understand. I'm a political activist. This is what you're meant to do. Give me a hard time. Bring it on. You know, I didn't like it. Oh, I was wrecked. I was like, ugh. And finally, the mental health nurse every morning. Hi, Brendan. Are you okay? And I said, all right. Listen up. And I had a moment of clarity. And I said, no, this is before that happened, they called me out, the mental health nurse. She was another girl. Her name's Jo. She was very nice. She asked me what was going on. I had a blood sugar level about 2.8. I was frustrated. I said, listen, I said, blah, blah, blah. I've been to her room, bloody sick of it, blah, blah, blah. And now she's gone, oh, this guy's mad. And fair enough. She was obligated to report what she'd heard, and she probably thought he's rushed speech. You know, I'm tired. Yeah, he's been through Iran. What's he on about? He's probably delusional. So no worries. I can understand. I understand the system. So she gets me assessed by Dr. Stephen Heed, HWD. He's straight out of, you know, Marathon Man with Dustin Hoffman. Is it safe? Remember the movie?
Vaguely, yeah.
Yeah. Is it safe? That famous movie with that Swiss-German accent, right?
Okay.
And he goes, Mr. O'Connor. You're clearly delusional. You were never in Iran. I'm sending you to the Mason Clinic. If you do not cooperate, you will be forcibly medicated. And I'm thinking, dear God, it's like a movie. It's like a movie. Listen to his accent. It's like perfect. He's like, and I'm thinking, really? I said, oh, okay. Okay, well, you got the power, brother. I can't resist. But, you know, I have to warn you now. I'll fight you to the death. Don't say stuff like that. It was a metaphor, but, and I said, you do realize that 40 feet that way is a locker. And in that locker is all my materials from Immigration New Zealand. And in those materials are the photocopies of my entry and exit visas to Iran. I don't care. I'm not looking. You're delusional.
Oh my God.
And I knew he couldn't send me to the Mason Clinic because I was on that hunger strike because they couldn't supervise me. But in the end, it would have been good to go because I would have got full access to telephones. But anyway, so I'm like really tired. I said, oh, well, do your worst. I'm too tired. I said, can you take me back to the cell, please? I don't want to talk to this guy anymore. So I warn you now, don't do it. Don't step on your privates. You're going to do it. I know you are, but whatever. So, and he did threaten to forcibly medicate. It didn't actually happen, but that was what they were threatening.
Yeah, yeah. We heard about that. And that was one of the things that we were concerned about.
Oh, I couldn't believe he was even saying it. It's like, oh, God, what an idiot. Anyway, so I'm on this hunger strike, and I'm so sleep deprived. And I said to the mental health nurse after, I said, you keep asking me how I am. As a former RN, comprehensive, worked in psychiatric, all right? I'm being sleep deprived and working every 15 minutes. You know what they do in Guantanamo Bay to break down the ego and get interrogation and mentally break people? They sleep deprive them. You come every morning and ask me how I am when you are watching me get mentally tortured. I am being tortured when I am taking a perfectly appropriate political protest, a non-violent protest, to highlight the terrible treatment of asylum seekers and the bad running of the jail. And you are punishing me. You're not assessing my risk. This is punishment. And I said, how would this look if this was filmed and gone online? You know this is bad. And she said, yeah, look, she actually said, oh, look, I agree. And I said, it better stop. I'm going. And they took me up to the medical center, and I told them I'm being tortured. I'm being sleep deprived. I told him my history. Within an hour, I was taken out of the room and placed in a normal cell on 30-minute OBS. It was like being in paradise. I had a tap. I had my water. I had my toilet, which was the normal conditions. But it was fully videoed. But, I never went through any of that in Western Australia. I never had any of that. And one of the guards said, oh, what are you doing here? You're still on a hunger strike. This is not protocol. I said, well, it is now, baby. It is now. So I lasted about 13 days, and I realized that I had an interview soon and with the Refugee Status Board. And the only reason I was doing it and I kept the asylum application going was because that interview would be recorded, and Kevin Foley, my solicitor, would get a copy. So that's the only reason I decided to do it. I've already decided I'm going to withdraw my application. I have no faith in the process.
Mm-hmm. I can see why that would be.
Yeah, I know. Carol had told me previously, Brendan, keep your statements brief in your application, your statements, because, and I said, for one, I can't even get a pen that works. I can't even get a word processor. I've got no access to my papers and effects, Carol. And she was just looking at the table. And I said, and she said, look, Brendan, they probably won't read it anyway. And I said, what? This is outrageous. So she's there. Kevin's published the, Richard Foley's published the letter, which you saw. And, Carol is having a fit. That was privilege. And I said, well, too bad. You just told me that they're acting corruptly and don't even read my stuff. Too bad for you. Now, it's not Carol's fault per se, but, she has to stand as a lawyer. She has not advocated for her clients. She needs to be a bit ashamed. All of them do. But she's the least guilty of all anyone. She's a nice person. She's not a shill or anything. She's not Jewish. She's an old communist socialist friend. Tired. That 50, 60-year-old. They're all burnt out. They're all paying their mortgage now. And she's a nice lady. She's a very nice lady. And Cameron Lisley was from the Refugee Status Board. And she said, I can't advocate for you anymore, Brendan, due to what's happened, blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, fine, whatever. I don't care. And she said, will you withdraw your application? I said, yeah, only if I'm guaranteed trip back to Malaysia. And I said, and by the way, Carol, in the paperwork, there's been no letter sent to the Malaysian consulate, and there's been no letter sent to Malaysian Airlines. Where is it? She said, I don't know. And said, yeah, exactly, because they have stopped Malaysia finding out what's happened, because they know Malaysia will accept my deportation back there. They know that. I've met the consulate. They know about my case. So I said, all right, I'm just going to withdraw. And they said, what will you do? I said, you try to send me back to Western Australia, I'll fight you to the death. And I mean, I will fight you to the death. I said, I'll accept going back to Sydney, but warn them now. If they want a war, I will fight them to the death. I'm getting off at Sydney. Just let me pass through. I'm peaceful. I'm not a risk to anyone. And I'm going straight to the Malaysian Airlines counter, and I'm getting a ticket, and I'm getting the the hell out of Dodge and back to Malaysia. And they said, look, we'll do what we can. Now, legally, they must send me back to Malaysia. But now they'd said, they went originally that the reason you're not allowed into New Zealand on character grounds is your 3-year racial vilification charge, which I said was part of the asylum application. It's garbage. I've given you detailed information which you failed to pass under my lawyer.
Wow. So wait a minute. This is like if you're applying for asylum and you're saying I was persecuted by this government, you know, locked me up for my free speech, and they say, well, I'm sorry, you can't come in on character grounds because you were locked up.
Oh, yeah, look, it's all stupid, but that's typical of bureaucracy. It's not about common sense. It's about forms and communist era ticking boxes and making sure you keep your job. So then it changed to, the reason they have to do this is because there's an open warrant. You see, that's part of the persecution, making a private telephone call public. And I told them about the threat to kill, where I said to the minister, if you don't investigate Liam Samuel Cashman for organising my beating in jail, I'll kill the bastard. Excuse my French. Which was just to provoke the minister into action. I didn't say it to the guy. I said it to the minister. And the minister rang me, Joe Francis, where he infamously spoke to me for 30 minutes. He's a good guy, Catholic, that he was more scared of his own prison officers than he was of the bikies after he stopped their drugs getting into the jail. And he had to have former Special Forces Commander James McMahon, a colonel in the SAS, a man with fingers in many pies, a multimillionaire with security companies, IT penetration testing companies, you name it, the head of the board of the West Coast Eagles, of the big football team here. And he's a clean-out guy. He comes to clean things out. And they had to bring him in to protect the minister from the West Australian police, organised crime and prison officers. That's how bad Western Australia is. With that in mind, finally, I argued them into the ground. I just thought, well, it's in God's hands. I did a lot of prayer. You know, I cried a bit too because I just thought, God, when is this going to end? I thought, I just have to, like St. Paul, you know, like the prophet, you know, you've got to submit to God's will and just accept it. And I just had to accept that this was the way it was. It wasn't nice, but just the way it was. And I had to look at my own behavior and question my whole approach. I had to reflect and say, what are you doing, Brendan? You're 47. You've got to get a grip on things. So finally, Andrew Chanick at Park and the other, his offsider, came to me and said, hey, Brendan, it's all good. Good news for you. We're going to get you out of here by next week. And Malaysia has agreed to accept your return to Malaysia. But even better news, we're not going to deport you. We're going to do a turnaround. I thought, oh, thanks, Andrew. I appreciate that. So there were good people out there. They were just trying to smooth the path. I was over the moon. I was really happy. And on...
So when was this?
This was on the Thursday over a week ago. So not the Thursday just gone, the Thursday before.
Okay.
And then on Tuesday night, I was transferred from the prison to the airport, but I never got out. The other guy was taken out, and there was a problem, and I was taken to the Manukau prison police station where they have a holding cells. I waited there for about 6 hours, and I was called for about 9 p.m., and I was escorted by police. They're very nice people. They made me a cup of coffee. I checked on my property, made sure it was present, my money and everything else. And they took me over, put me in a holding cell for a couple of hours, and then I was taken to the airport. We went in a back entrance, so I had an armed police officer, very nice, escorting me. I met a New Zealand immigration official, met him. They had my passport and my ticket in their pocket. And they said we would be meeting three officials from Malaysian Airlines and I would be escorted back to Malaysia with three security personnel, which is a standard procedure. I don't know if that was, seeing as I was a turnaround, but I think that, you know, and fair enough, they were a little worried that I was going to do something silly. Now, they probably thought I wasn't, but it was just to cover their butts. Malaysian Airlines paid for the flight. Thank you very much, Malaysian Airlines. It was pretty funny. I had an armed police officer, a New Zealand immigration officer, and three Malaysian Airlines officials with handcuffs who they had the authority to use if need be, which, of course, never happened, of course. And they're just pushing into the line. Everyone's looking at me going, who the hell is this guy? And I was just moving through all the lines. And I was patted down and body searched. And we sat on the plane, and they got me my drinks and my food. The food was delicious after that horrible food in the prison.
Well, you know, if the airline food is delicious, you know you're used to pretty bad food.
Yeah, that food was damn delicious on Malaysian Airlines, let me tell you. I was right at the back of the plane. And the guys really treated me well. And they said, relax, Mr. O'Connor. There's no problem. You're just going to come to the airport and... 10-hour flight, my bum was hurting, you know, it was a bit, you know, economy class. I was hoping I'd get an upgrade, but no such luck to business class. And we all took a photo. I'd love to get a coffee. We all took a photo together.
So these were Malaysian security guys, right?
Yeah, Malaysian security guys. And so we arrived in the morning. We arrived at 7:30 a.m. We left at about 1:30 AM New Zealand time, 5 hours difference. And we got there about 7:30 AM. I was just about kissing the ground, felt immediately relieved. And they took me to the Royal Malaysian Police meeting, a roundtable meeting. They're like the FBI or Australian Federal Police. And I gave them a mountain of material, which they were very grateful for. I told them what had happened, told them about my experiences in Iran. And the boss said, "Mr. O'Connor, you're welcome in Malaysia. Relax." Quote. I'll
Hey,
repeat it.
excellent.
He said, "Mr. O'Connor, you are welcome in Malaysia. Relax." That's the way he said it. I nearly cried, literally, literally nearly cried. And I said, "Thank you so much. I really appreciate the way we treated." They slapped me in the back, shook my hand, and said, "Got my details, what was going, where I was staying, and so on." And I left, and I just about kissed the ground.
Yeah, that's fantastic. The other just last week with this Trump Jerusalem thing, I think a high-level Malaysian was, I think it was a military guy, was quoted as saying the Malaysian military is ready to, help liberate Al-Quds, Jerusalem, when the time comes, or something like that. I was kind of floored by that because, since Mahathir Mohamad left, I thought they'd back down a few notches as far as standing up for justice. But it sounds like they're ready to do well by you, and God bless them for it.
Oh yeah, God bless. And look, no. Under Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, who was very outspoken, these guys are even more pro-Islam. There's a lot of criticism around the place. There's a lot of fighting at the moment. Politically, it's sensitive, but
Right. You probably don't want to get involved in, jumping on one side against another
I
side.
don't. They're under a lot of pressure due to they have to cooperate with the One Belt Road project with China. They've got no choice economically, and of course, who's leading that? That's Israel's leading that whole project. I mean,
Really?
Netanyahu. You didn't know that. You got to watch my videos. I put all the
I guess I need to
information
watch
into
more of your
one.
videos.
Oh God,
I mean,
yeah.
I imagine they're trying to lead it, but I'm surprised that
No,
they would
they are
succeed.
leading it. They are leading it. Netanyahu has publicly stated we are matching Israeli high technology with China's capacity. They're going to be doing all the robotics. They're going to build Israel supplying the technology, the AI technology, the robotics, which is all stolen off the U.S. taxpayers and DARPA. All stolen, all thieved. And they are matching it with China's capacity. So Israel is now deeply in bed with China and India. They're doing all the class A infrastructure stuff. They're doing huge deals right through the section. China's paying the 100 billion. It's all coming out of the City of London, and Israel is a leading figure, and they're going to have a road all the way up to Moscow, all the way to the Channel Coast, and another belt all the way through Asia, all the way to the coast of occupied Palestine. That's what's happening. So you've got to read up One Belt, One Road. So Malaysia is under pressure. Israel has threatened them, said there's only one country that continues to resist us, and that's Malaysia. So you know how Israel is. When they start naming it, you might want to get nervous. But Malaysia has been resisting them for years, and I can't believe how many people don't even know that. I mean, they've been hardcore against Israel. They've lost two aircraft. They've done many conferences. Dr. Mahathir Mohamad was very outspoken. So has Prime Minister Najib Razak and
Well, they
his people.
convicted Israel of crimes against humanity. They actually convicted Israel, I believe, or rather, they had a judgment on 9/11 even, and it
Oh,
was right
yeah,
after
and then,
that
of
that these
course.
planes started going down.
Yeah, a couple of years, the plane started disappearing. Look, that's Talpiot program. A lot of people are poo-pooing this Talpiot program. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the key to understanding Israel's power. Rad Group, Zohar Zisapel. Man, these people, that's one of one company of 30. And Zohar Zisapel, the first major graduate of the Talpiot program, Israeli military intelligence, being funded to start companies. That man dominates all billing and infrastructure services for every single major telco. They do all the encrypted VoIP communications for government. They do all the class A infrastructure. They do special forces encrypted communications. They do, I mean, you name it. And that's one. And when I first pushed that forward in 2007 and then put a court document in 2010, every single article disappeared. And then the Israeli ambassador turned up, the Israeli deputy and foreign minister, the Australian foreign minister, and 135 local and federal members of parliament in the August 2010 incredible event directed at me, where they said, "We have organized this in direct response to Brendan O'Connell," a week before the original start of the trial, the biggest criminal contempt of court case in history anywhere in the world, and a major international incident, which makes the Israeli ambassador turning up to the gallery with the famous Irving Lipstadt defamation case, where people were just raving about it, went online. Who even talks about my stuff? Who even talks about it? And they continue to poo-poo and say the Talpiot program is irrelevant and that is garbage. And thank God, I've forgotten his name, Greg and Professor Tony Hall, Greg, and the guys doing the actually doing debates and doing pushing this a lot. The Jewish guy.
Well, let's say.
Rosh.
You're not talking about Jeremy Rothkuchel?
Yeah, Jeremy Rothrochelle. He's
Oh,
really picked it
okay.
up, and yeah, so he's challenged good old Ryan Dawson. He was a God, he's a creep. Sorry, I don't want to give over.
Yeah,
I can't stand
you
him.
mentioned that kind of back and forth, and somehow I haven't been on top of that. I know, I sort of vaguely am aware of who
I
Ryan
don't
Dawson
even listen
is.
to what he says. The man, it's, I know you don't want to get involved. The man would sell his mother to get on press TV or Russia Today. He's as deep as a puddle, and he considered, doing another expose on the JFK assassination was more important than exposing Israel, its foundation in Orthodox Judaism as the Jewish state, not the Zionist state, its foundation in Orthodox Judaism and Jewish racial and religious supremacism, where they call for the slaughter of all opponents, Amalekites. They call for the slaughter of nursing babies, small children. The academics call for it. That crazy Russian MP calls for it. The guy who called for the wives and sisters of Palestinian resistance fighters to be raped. This permeates Israeli society at every level. And the fact that now Russia is deeply in bed with Netanyahu, Putin and Netanyahu and Trump are all linked in by Chabad-Lubavitch, where the Borscht Belt said, "Oh, we're getting rid of America. Too many left-wing Jews, but the Russians are better because we'll be able to do whatever we want in the occupied territories." That's almost a quote. And then President Clinton said, "The biggest problem to peace in the Middle East is the Russian Jews." That's what he said in Israel because they're so hawkish. And Netanyahu wants them in. Half of them are Orthodox Christians, more than half. They don't even qualify as Jewish.
Well,
Watch the
those
video.
people exist, but Brendan, we with this UN vote, we have Russia and China on one side, and we have Trump and Netanyahu and a couple of islands on the other side.
Oh, they're all in together. I don't care what they say at the UN. They are working with Israel. I've shown it completely. They're openly admitting it because they want all the electrical engineering degrees out of Russia. So America has delivered their top secret F-35 to Israel, first operational outside US. And guess who all the technicians are all over the F-35? They're all Russian technicians. Right, there's multiple billion-dollar military exchange contracts. They're sending all the high technology to Russia and Iran, which was why that lawyer, I said, I will embarrass you if you keep trying to divert me from Jewish racial and religious supremacism and the Israeli high technology sector and the Tel Puyot program. I had to threaten them with embarrassment for 3 weeks until they finally acquiesced and said, "Oh, okay, you can work with Dr. Alan Zabrowski and others for a conference in Tehran." And he was so drug addicted and such a lunatic in the end, I said, "I can't stand this anymore. I have to leave." And I was desperate. I had no money. That was a big call. I wish Ahmadinejad at the time was still in. I don't trust the Rouhani crowd. I'm not going to get into it.
Yeah,
but
I think in all of these countries there are different types of people with different outlooks.
No, Iranians were getting in touch with me saying, "Brennan, you're in the wrong crowd. That was the Rasfanjani,
yeah.
Rouhani crowd, man. They're all drug addicts."
Yeah, see, and I've had contact with the exact opposite crowd over there. But, we only have a couple of minutes, and it occurs to me that your interest in these two aspects of things, this sort of Jewish supremacism built into a age-old ideology on the one hand, and this Talpiot program, high-tech sector on the other, it brings me back to a book I read ages ago, Gore Vidal's book, Kalki, Kalki.
He was right. Yeah, Gore Vidal,
I think, yeah, I think, what was now, wasn't that, as I recall, I think that was the one about the Israeli scientists using, biological techniques to, kill off everybody else or something like that.
Absolutely. They're into agriculture, medicine. There's nothing they're not into now, and it's all stolen out of the U.S. Every last
interesting
drop.
Stuff. We're going to have to
US.
continue this conversation down the line. I'm going to try and get you a copy of this Guyano book, From Yahweh to Zion, because I know you're going to have interesting reactions. Well, thank you so much, Brendan O'Connell. God bless you, and alhamdulillah that you're free. I look forward to your continuing great work out of Malaysia, and hey, stay in touch and enjoy your freedom, man.
Look, Kevin, thank you, and everyone who advocated. I haven't forgotten you. I'll speak to you all soon. Thank God for all of you and sticking together. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Brendan. God bless.
God bless you, Kevin.
Okay. This is Truth Jihad Radio. Kevin Barrett here with Brendan O'Connell. Back next week, same time, same channel, God willing. See you all then.
Thank you.